I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Danny Welbeck, and you're listening to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Here's Alexis Sanchez! What a finish! Walcott's going to go through and score! Into the middle, Giroud! It's two!
Hi, I'm Russell Hargreaves, and you're listening to a bumper edition of the Arsenal Weekly Podcast for the week of the 7th of December, 2015. On today's show, goalkeepers are the order of the day. Peter Cech talks to us about how he relaxes away from football. Bob Wilson stops by as our Arsenal insider. And Kevin Mooney gives us his views on the must-win game in Olympiacos. But let's kick off with the weekend review. Arsenal looked to put a miserable November behind them when they welcomed Sunderland to the Emirates on Saturday in the Premier League. And after an even opening half an hour to the game, they went ahead, courtesy of Joel Campbell.
It was a decent ball in, and at least it turns the opposition's defence round, and also a little bit of uncertainty with the clearance. Good ball. It is a good ball. Campbell over on the left-hand side scores! How about that, Joel Campbell? Terrific hit, composed finish, put through on the left. And he only had Kostel Pantelimon to beat, but an unerring shot beyond the keeper and into the net. And even though Arsenal have been a little bit below par in this first half, Campbell's quality comes through, and it's Arsenal that lead by a goal to nil here at the Emirates Stadium. Joel Campbell netting here to put the Gunners in front.
After Olivier Giroud put through his own goal on the stroke of half-time, he went from villain to hero when Giroud restored the Gunners' lead on 64 minutes.
Back towards Ozil. Monreal is free once again. Ozil just can't get half a yard and get away from Villa and also Barini, but it's Monreal moving forward now. It's with Ramsey, looks for the curl, and the header goes in! And Olivier Giroud scores pretty much in the same place that he scored an own goal in the first half, and this time with a glancing header beats Pantelimon, and Arsenal are back in front. They lead by 2-1. Poacher's strike, this one.
Yeah, good goal by Arsenal. Can't believe you suggested Giroud was going to come off that. Terrible decision, but good play by Arsenal. Patient. But this time, when they came from the wide area inside, they then whipped that ball into the near post. Giroud gets a lot of goals there. I said earlier when Ozil had that shot, I thought there was someone on the far post that had just maybe nearly got a touch on it. It was actually, then I re-explained it, saying it was Giroud nearly got a touch. Well, this time he does.
Sunderland remained a threat for the remainder of the game and missed a couple of golden opportunities to equalise, but it was Aaron Ramsey who put the game to bed in injury time.
This is Ramsey breaking forward inside the penalty area. It's Gibbs, it's Walcott. Can he pull the trigger? Still feel Walcott to the right-hand side. Can Chambers get the shot away inside the area? Surely he's got to go in, has it yet? Arsenal have got a third. Arsene Wenger can relax here. It's Aaron Ramsey that gives Arsenal breathing space. In added on time, we can all relax because the Gunners lead by 3-1. It just wouldn't open up for Arsenal. And then suddenly, as the ball came back across the six-yard box, Ramsey was there. And the Gunners surely have secured the 3 points.
After the match, Arsene Wenger spoke about how he thought the game could be pivotal in his side's title challenge.
My mind as well, I was a bit more nervous than usual because I felt that it was a pivotal game today because we were had big injuries. First game without the players. We had to win, absolutely. We played against a difficult team who was well organised and good on breaks. All the ingredients were there, you know, to get a disappointing result. And because we haven't won for 3 games, people would say, yes, we are in a crisis. So it was important to get the win. We're a bit edgy, a bit nervous in the first half. In the second half, we played with more freedom, more fluency and more incisiveness. And when we won the game, I think But it was a tough one, and you look at the results in the Premier League, it is like that.
Olivier Giroud scored his 10th goal of the campaign in the win, but the Frenchman was quick to heap praise on his fellow goal scorer, Joel Campbell.
I know Joe very well, and I'm happy for him because he has the opportunity to show his talent, and he's a very good guy, top man, you know, very generous on the pitch, and he never give up. And it has not always been easy for him, but I always used to speak to him and to encourage him. And when he's playing like that, he's very important for us. So hopefully, yeah, we're gonna carry on like that all together.
The win has moved the Gunners up to second place in the Premier League again, just 2 points behind surprise leaders Leicester City. It also sends them into Wednesday evening's must-win Champions League clash against Olympiacos, full of confidence, and we'll talk next to Kevin Mooney about that very game. Kevin Mooney is a resident of Portland in Oregon on America's West Coast and helps out with the Arsenal America Club website stateside. Kevin, great to have you on the show. And maybe if you can begin by just telling us a little bit more about what you do with Arsenal Media from where you're based.
The best way to describe it is, since I am 8 hours behind London, I kind of am the de facto overnight guy. So I'll be the person who posts the stories that come out late at night, send out overnight social media, Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And it's pretty much just, you know, 7 day a week kind of thing that I have to do. So, it's obviously a lot of fun, and, you know, getting all the news before everyone else is always a little bit of a treat too. You know, between laptops and iPhones, it's something I can do on the fly and, you know, almost from anywhere if I need to. And, you know, sometimes the timing of the stories is can be a bit awkward, you know, 'cause it'll be in the middle of my afternoon, but it works out really well. We've got just a great system set up, so it's efficient and just seems to work great. I've been doing it for about 6.5 years, so I everything just kind of comes, you know, just naturally at this point. It's, you know, you see a story, you figure out the best way to get it out there, you know, or to present it either on the website or, you know, through Twitter or Facebook post or whatnot. But, you know, obviously I take a lot of guidance from the guys in London, and you know, just have learned immensely from them over the years. You know, obviously I didn't grow up with the English game, but I've just learned a tremendous amount about it, you know, over the last 6 years, and you know, even longer that I've been a fan of the club. I've been a fan since about 1997, so it's kind of joy that way.
Yeah, definitely. So just maybe sort of rewinding a bit to that kind of time then, mid to late 90s then, Kevin. How did you get into the Gunners? What got you hooked? And just talk me through how your love for them has kind of grown, I'm sure, and matured over time.
Well, it's kind of a long, winding story. It actually has roots back at the 1994 World Cup. I remember watching that Netherlands-Brazil game and seeing Dennis Bergkamp score the goal, and I was just absolutely, you know, just blown away by his performance. And it was several years later when I, you know, like virtually every other Arsenal fan, read Fever Pitch. And, you know, so that kind of gave me a little bit more background into the club. And then at that time in the late 90s, basically the only way to catch you know, English Premier League games was these kind of late night highlight shows, you know, kind of like a match of the day kind of thing. And I just remember, you know, watching one at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it happened to be Arsenal, and I saw Dennis Bergkamp. And from that point on, I was just absolutely hooked. But then it was still several years later until it was actually, you know, getting easier to see games, whether it be live or on tape delay. But, you know, whether it was piling into a bar or a pub to watch a game at 7 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, just, you know, happening to get lucky that one game would be on TV. It was tricky until more recent years, until, you know, probably, I don't know, 2004, 2005.
And obviously, just so we mentioned Portland as well, it's been a great weekend for the city as well, hasn't it? With Portland Timbers winning the MLS title, being American national champions for the first ever time as well. And I guess that ties in quite nicely for you, because you've got your Premier League team in Arsenal, and that is very much the focus for a lot of fans, isn't it? But then MLS and that happening on your own doorstep is a really nice bonus as well.
Yeah, it's really been fantastic. And one of the really, really great things too is, you know, all in all the cities that have MLS clubs, the Arsenal fans are also really tied into their local club as well. So, you know, there's a lot of support in all the cities for it, but especially Portland. I mean, the bar is that I go to is also a Timbers bar. So, you know, it was, I'm sure, packed to the gills tonight. So,
but you were there doing the baby feeding duty.
Yeah, unfortunately, no. I was you know, hunkered down in my basement watching this one. But
No, fair play.
I'm sure it was just amazing.
Fair play. No, we like it. So just taking things a little bit more broadly, obviously, for Arsenal, important victory at the weekend against Sunderland. We've been hearing about it a little bit on the Arsenal Weekly podcast already, but absolutely key that after a winless November in the Premier League, a lot of draws, but no victory, it was vital that Arsenal got that win and just really keep that championship challenge nice and on track.
Really glad that November's over again. It's just amazing how every year it's such a struggle. Great way to get back on track. And, you know, now that some of the, you know, seeing Theo come back out, you know, at the end of the game, it really kind of gives that extra confidence that, you know, we're going to get past these injuries and, or at least some of the injuries, and, you know, really make a concerted push again, you know, in the festive period and then into the new year.
Yeah, so many games thick and fast across so many tournaments. It's the vital time, isn't it, to get over a blip and then re-hit your straps again.
Exactly. And I'm just really looking forward to the FA Cup getting started again. And, you know, hopefully we can get all the players back and, you know, get enough so we can get some good rotation and really just make another push.
Yeah, quite a few hopefully due back late December at worst, so we shall wait and see how that one pans out. And Kevin, obviously we shouldn't neglect, there is a huge, huge game this coming midweek as Arsenal's Champions League hopes rest on going to Olympiacos and getting the job done after two wins in their last three in Europe to help turn things around in their hands in theory. This is just a massive one, isn't it?
Absolutely huge. I think it's funny that, you know, once again, it's kind of coming down to an Olympiacos game. In other years, it seems like that's always been kind of the throwaway game, that we don't necessarily have to play a huge squad. I mean, we played a game a few years ago where I think all the kids played. But, yes, this time it's really important. And, you know, going down there, it's a tough place to play. And, you know, I don't think we've had terribly much luck. But hopefully, coming on the heels of this win, it'll really be, you know, we'll have some momentum behind us and just get the job done.
And that proud run, obviously, of not just qualifying for the Champions League, but then making it through to at least the first round of the knockout stages is one that the club is desperate to continue, not just from a pride state, but you think of the financial ramifications for it as well. And just a team like Arsenal that's used to competing at the top tier and going deep into these European seasons for the fans as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I just remember a couple of years ago looking up and just seeing the number of teams that have accomplished that. And I think it's Arsenal and Real Madrid, and that's it over that same amount of time. So it's certainly a, you know, good company to be in, and hopefully we can just keep pushing through and keep that streak alive.
Yeah, 3-2 defeat, of course, at the Emirates much earlier in the group stages. And, as we let you go, you're no doubt predicting that the boys go there and get the job done in Greece.
Yep, I am. I'm the eternal optimist. I'm thinking a 3-1 win.
Would do the job very nicely indeed, wouldn't it? We should wait and see if that happens. Well, Kevin, really appreciate you joining us here on the Arsenal Weekly podcast, and fascinating to get your views.
Yeah, absolutely. Great talking to you.
Kiev Arsenal are to progress on Wednesday evening in Olympiacos is Peter Cech, and we'll speak to him next. Peter Cech has settled into life at the club and is proving to be one of the signings of the season anywhere so far. He sat down with Arsenal media's Liam Roberts to talk about a hobby that keeps him sharp between the posts.
Yeah, so what made you want to do the drumming videos in the first place? Is it just a hobby? I know you've been playing for a long time, but...
It was just accident, probably. No, the thirst is, the reason behind that, yeah, is that you don't see yourself playing.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes it's good for your reference to see if you progress in a certain way. To see, you know, it's you film yourself. So sometimes you take the normal practice session and you put the camera on and you film yourself. And then I was if you do different things, you don't really see it in there sometimes. So what can happen is that you play a song and then in a month you play the same song and you put the video, and then you put the video in 1 month, and then you actually can see if you play it better, more precise, more relaxed, if you have to force or if you know you're there. So then you see suddenly the same song you played 2 years ago, and then you see it after 2 years, you just say like, oh yeah. So you can see clearly that the progression is there, and actually this is the reason. And then then I got the idea, thinking, okay, some people are afraid sometimes to show or to do something because they don't believe it's perfect. But it's not about being perfect. It's about to do something you love, you enjoy, and just to take the joy out of that. So just to show, like, it doesn't have to be perfect that you can put the video on.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, it's a kind of probably like a help to understand that you don't have to be perfect to start doing something.
Yeah, because it's like two or three, and then people start watching.
Or you can, you don't necessarily has to be. You don't have to be six to start doing something. I started when I was 30, almost. So if you look at it this way, then you can always start something you enjoy. You take the challenge, and then you can take it as far as you want.
Is it something you always wanted to kind of do? Play an instrument?
No, it happened actually accidentally, because I never played any instrument before, and I never had a music lesson or anything like that. But, we once had Carlo Cudicini, we once played the PlayStation rock band thing, when with a little, with a little drum and the guitar, and he plays piano. So, we had to say, okay, let's have fun with that. So I jumped on the drums without ever playing it before. So I had never played it before. And then, so we figured out little things, and we played, we had so much fun.
Yeah.
Then in a way, I realized how much I enjoy, because I love music in general.
Yeah.
So I was always listening to music. But in this moment, I realized that actively participating in the song you enjoy listening to, it was even better. And this was the idea where I said, oh, if I get a digital drum kit or normal drum kit or whatever, then I can put the iPod in, buy play-along songs, and just to play for fun and enjoy and relax. So it's all started like that, with this idea. And then as soon as I started playing more and more songs, I realized, like, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that routine, the learning process and everything. And I love the fact that I'm improving, and I love the fact that I could play a gig with a real band, and I enjoy the fact I'm progressing and all of this. So in the end, I ended up where I ended up with the drumming.
Do you think the goalkeeping kind of helps you with the hand-eye coordination? Is that
and it's the other way around as well. Because you lose your all four limbs different way.
Yeah.
So you need to kind of find a way to coordinate things.
Yeah.
And you keep learning and you keep learning and you keep learning in your brain and firing your brain. And in a way, it helps you to coordinate better even for football. So it's helpful for... Obviously, being a goalkeeper helped me to start learning faster at the drums.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there are so many things I learn on the drums that I can use in goalkeeping as well, because the hand-eye coordination, and especially the independence of each of the limbs, it's helpful.
It's a lot of repetitive as well. Like if you're kind of training every day, doing this, like near enough the same kind of drills, same on the drums, isn't it?
Well, it gives you a routine and new structure. Your practice and I think that's I enjoyed it overall, and I have to say that for me to be able to sit and play and play along with the songs I enjoy to listen to, it relaxes me. So I really have, when you have a moment, you go in the studio, you play 3-4 songs just for fun, and you just walk out, you think like, brilliant.
I'm loaded, yeah. Who's some of your favorite drummers?
Well, I like Dave Grohl. I like Foo Fighters, so and like Nirvana. So obviously, I'm a big fan of Dave Grohl, and obviously, Tyler Hawkins, took the drums in Foo Fighters, and he has his own style of playing, but it's absolutely brilliant. It sounds great and suits the band, and so I like them. Obviously, I listened when I was a kid. I listened to one of the first rock bands I listened to was was Queen, and I still love listening to Queen, and I had the opportunity to meet Roger Taylor, so it's another fantastic drummer. So, and he can go along. There's so many great drummers. It's just hard to pick one. But obviously, because I was fan of Nirvana and Foo Fighters, then I would pick Dave Grohl and Taylor.
Cech is just two clean sheets away from becoming the all-time Premier League leader. Already an icon in the game, he could well go on to become an Arsenal legend as well. We'll be speaking to another legendary Arsenal keeper later in the show, but first it's time for this week's history lesson.
And it's Adams, put through by Bold! Would you believe it? Or Charlie George, who can hit him? Oh, a great goal!
It's off for grabs now!
On the 9th of December 1961, Paul Davis was born in Dulwich in London. After signing for Arsenal in 1977 as an apprentice and turning professional a year later, he'd rise through the ranks and make his debut in 1980 against Tottenham Hotspur. That was in the North London derby, and here's Paul talking about that very special day.
I didn't know I was playing in the game until 2 hours before kickoff. Terry Neill, the manager, decided to pick a big squad that day. We had about 18 players in the squad, and we didn't know who was going to play until we had the meeting a couple of hours before. We had a feeling that he might change the team around because we were the club were in the final of the FA Cup, and they were in the semi-final of the Cup Winners' Cup, all within a close period of time. And he just wanted to, and we didn't have a chance of winning the league. And the game against Spurs was in the league. So a few of us had an idea that he may have changed it around, and he did, and he put me in. And like I said, I just...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
A couple of hours before kickoff that I was playing, of course, there's an adrenaline rush in the meeting and excitement. But then, you have to kind of, in the end, kind of just make sure that you're ready and prepared to perform well. Luckily for me and for the team, we won that day 2-1. We beat Spurs at White Hart Lane 2-1, which was fantastic.
Paul would become an integral part of the Arsenal midfield that went on to win the First Division Championship and the League Cup twice, as well as the FA Cup once. But it was his heroic display in the 1994 European Cup Winners' Cup final win over Parma, where he anchored a depleted Gunners midfield that would go down as his finest moment.
George had to put in some younger players and even players that playing out position perhaps. So Stephen Morrow, I remember playing in midfield alongside myself. He wasn't really a midfielder, he was more of a defender, centre-back or full-back. He was playing in midfield, and then Ian Selly, who was a young player, hadn't played many games, was playing in midfield, and then myself, who was the older player, who was going to try and manage it all in midfield. So it was a bit nerve-wracking going into it, because I remember Parma being a team that they had some key players. Brolin, I remember, was an international player, and Espria was an international player, and they had one or two key players who... And everybody thought they were going to win the game because they were, on paper, a more talented team. And But, you know, we stuck it in, and I think we deserved to win the game in the way that we played it. And, again, another great night for us all.
Paul would leave Arsenal in 1995 after 18 years with the club. In total, he played 447 games, scoring 37 goals. He returned in 1996 as a coach before leaving in 2003 to join the PFA's elite coaching department. We'll have another history lesson next week, but now it's time to talk to our legendary Arsenal insider.
Let's hear from another Arsenal insider on the Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Bob Wilson played 308 first-team games for Arsenal and 525 matches in total for the club over an 11-year period, and then spent a further 28 years on board, of course, as goalkeeping coach as well. Bob, great to have you on the Arsenal Weekly Podcast. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm really pleased that you've gone with the 500-plus figure because... I am always introduced as 308 games, and I did wear that badge very proudly for 525. It's just that the rest were in the stiffs. I was in the reserves for so long, nobody really thought I was ever going to make it. And so it's important to me. It just shows that you can get there in the end.
That's fascinating in itself. So how old were you then when you actually really made your mark as a regular first teamer then?
Well, let me just say, you know, you've got to realise I arrived as a almost 22-year-old school teacher, played 8 first-team games as an amateur school teacher. Can you imagine Alexis Sanchez or Mesut Ozil looking round and having an amateur school teacher in goal nowadays? No, you can't. You know, it was an amazing story, really, that... you know, that I managed to get in eventually at the age, I really, it was the beginning of the season of the 67-68 season, and I had a blinding game at White Hart Lane, and Arsenal were looking for a new goalie by then. And after a month of really playing very well and like the switch suddenly being thrown, Bertie Mee said, you know, we're not looking for another goalie. So I was by that time 26, getting on for 27.
Amazing. And yeah. The rest was history, we'd like to say. Now, of course, we've also been talking to Peter Cech over the course of the show as well. And just what a fantastic addition. I can't think of anyone really much more qualified than you to talk about Peter Cech's qualities with Arsenal, clearly, and also, of course, before that with Chelsea and internationally as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled that he is at the club and possibly had a tiny little bit to do with it because... the gentleman who does the deals for Arsenal, we were sitting in the director's box at one lunchtime when he was talking about Petr Cech, and I just said, look, you know, I don't think Mourinho will let him go, but I think Mr. Abramovich owes him after all he's won and after all he's done and his loyalty. And I said, this guy is not even 33. He is now. He's just 33. So in my mind, he's got at least 5, 6, 7 seasons, you know, remembering that David Seaman retired at 41, Pat Jennings retired at the age of 41, slightly different nowadays, I agree. But and I said, look, you know, this guy would be an amazing addition. And I mean, from everything I've heard from the boys in the dressing room, he is just that. You know, he has the experience, he has the stature. Outside Buffon, who is still playing, but I think, is slightly vulnerable now and past his best. Petr Cech is the best and most experienced goalkeeper in the world at this moment in time. And I'm not saying, you know, he's better than Courtois. I understand why Courtois was playing at Chelsea. He's an outstanding goalkeeper. But we have the most experienced and still best all-round goalkeeper for that in the world. And I think, you know, watching the Newcastle game, he made 2 saves in that game that for me were pure perfection. One came early on when Watmore got through and Petr Cech made his goal of 8 yards by 8 foot, 192 square feet, look tiny. And in fact, he shot virtually straight at him and he killed it. And then early on in the second half, he made an extraordinary save where, you know, he expects the unexpected, which is a goalkeeper you have to do. Not quite with a Giroud goal that came off Giroud's shin, but certainly a save he made in the second half on the goal line that was sheer instinct, anticipation, knowledge. And, you know, I gather that he's an amazing guy around the dressing room and around London Coney and the training ground.
No, it's a wonderful addition, and hopefully, Bob, no reason why he can't keep up that kind of standard and continue to instil everything that he does for, as you say, many years, but crucially for Arsenal this season too, when they're in with a chance of maybe some silverware and possibly, who knows, a league title.
Well, I mean, the league title, I tend to be a little bit... not pessimistic. I'm never pessimistic. I'm realistic. And I mean, the fact is that as long as you have a sheikh in Sheikh Mansour and as long as you have the oligarch in Mr. Abramovich, it is very difficult to look beyond those clubs because of the money they pay for the players, the squads that they are able to pay, the amount that they pay, whereas we are self-sustaining as a club. I admire that enormously. So I tend to be realistic. Having said that, we have a terrific squad. We have great addition, obviously, with Petr Cech. And we have boys who have yet to fulfil their real potential. For instance, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think, can be as good as he wants to be. It's just getting in Alex's brain that he has that ability. He can take people on. He's got strength. He's got everything. Absolutely everything to terrify defenders, and that is playing either in a wide role or indeed in an attacking midfield role, say just behind the front men. And people like him, you know, Kieran Gibbs, I think, is a fantastic fullback, and he's adaptable as well. And I think Callum Chambers is a boy that I would like to see. I think he'd become England centre-half eventually, but he is such an athlete, I quite fancy seeing him in a midfield role.
Yeah, no, I can fully understand that, and a few people have maybe wondered if that is an option moving forward. Bob, let's just sort of change tack a little bit. There's a few little things I wanted to ask you. We've got a couple of tweets from our listeners as well, but going back to Petr Cech, obviously he talks a lot in his interview with us about drumming, helping his goalkeeping, his rhythm and so on. Did you ever have any kind of hobbies that helped you between the sticks?
Oh, that's such an interesting one. I mean, the fact that it would help him with his goalkeeping, because I watch him carefully in the tunnel before a game. When you see him on television and everything, he's never static. You always see him moving. So I can almost imagine him, you know, into a rhythm of, you know, getting the body. I mean, I can see what he's talking about. In my case, my hobby was my garage doors. I had a double garage doors. I was a very lucky boy. My dad was a borough engineer and surveyor in Chesterfield. We had a beautiful big house. I was born into that sort of family. And we had this double garage doors, wooden doors, and you would find me every day, every night, every spare minute with a football, banging that ball against the doors and taking the rebound. So catching away from my body, catching into my body, catching it in the different ways you can catch it, catching it above my head, a ball bouncing in front of me. And I would do that for hour after hour after hour. So if that in any way replicates, I mean, I can hear the ball already going ba-boom, ba-boom, yeah, ba-boom, like the drum. But I mean, that for me was my hobby. It really was my only hobby. I had this dream. And although my dad, you know, initially said, look, football's not a proper job. I went to Man United. Sir Matt Busby tried to sign me when he signed a guy I played alongside as a schoolboy, Nobby Stiles, who went on to win the World Cup. And my dad said, it's not a proper job, son. When you've got a proper job and you still want to be a footballer, you'll have my blessing, but not until. So that's why I went to Loughborough University. And that in itself has been amazing for me, ultimately, with my job in television.
Just about to ask you about that, Bob, because obviously you've had, as you say, a brilliant career coming through as a teacher and then as an outstanding player, and then obviously so many years where I've loved watching you as a broadcaster as well.
Well, you know, I was so fortunate. I mean, the BBC took a massive chance on me. I used to get interviewed as an Arsenal player, and I guess being a school teacher and having taught for 1 year, and I then did all my coaching badges. You know, I wasn't saying, you know, every second word.
Could be a media trainer these days as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, I look at Gary Lineker was with me for almost 2 years. I think it was on Football Focus. But I had 20 amazing years at the BBC and got headhunted by ITV. Because, again, I always wanted to be number one, and I was never going to be number one to Des Lynam, who was an outstanding broadcaster. And the BBC weren't prepared to take a chance on sportsmen in the same way they are now. So I ultimately went to ITV, but not without, obviously, many, many dramas and what we call Coleman balls. If you want to hear the one from my first 2 weeks, they shouted in my ear, "Bob, we've got some team news." I was doing Football Focus, and it's Joe Jordan. I said, "Yeah, he's not fit." And they said, "No, no, he's fit, he's fit." I said, "No, he's not fit." And they said, "No, no, we're coming back to you in 10 seconds. Just tell." And I got caught between two ways of saying that Joe Jordan was, in fact, fit. And I wanted to say, we just heard Joe Jordan has just passed a late fitness test.
Yeah.
And sadly, it came out as Joe Jordan has just pissed a late fatness test. So that is still in the BBC archives as, you know, very early Bob Wilson broadcasting days.
We'll finish off, if we can, with a couple of tweets, as I mentioned. At Nearly 70 says, "Please ask Bob what was the most important save that he ever made."
Well, if you'd said my favourite save, it was at the feet of Bestie in the beginning of our double year when we were winning 1-0 and he came through one against one. I've got to slip that one in, but that wasn't the most important. The most important save came, my wife's going to kill me for mentioning this, but I made a mistake in the cup final, having had an extraordinary season all the way round. So in the 71 final, we've gone to Tottenham of all places on the Monday night and we've got what we wanted. We could have got a 0-0 draw and done it, but we got a 1-0 win. And then came 4 days, 5 days later at Wembley, and I made a little error. If it had only been 1-0, I would have cost Arsenal the double instead of being Arsenal's player of the season, which I'm very proud of. But within 2 minutes of that error, they had a chance, Liverpool, and Brian Hall was only about 8 yards out, and he swiveled and hit this shot, and it was an instinctive save. And had that got in, we would have been dead and buried. And instead, I sort of made up for my error. And within another 2 minutes, we had got the Eddie Kelly stroke George Graham drama goal. And we went on to Charlie's famous wonderful strike.
Wow. And just finally, at Always Arsenal says, "Bob, apart from yourself, who is the greatest Arsenal goalkeeper of all time?"
Well, you've got, you know, that is so difficult because I'd want to mention Jack Kelsey, obviously, who was amazing when I arrived and kept encouraging me. Pat Jennings, who I say is the most naturally gifted goalkeeper I've ever seen in my life. But, of course, the most successful, and I've got to say, therefore, the greatest, and I was alongside this guy for 16 years of his career as his coach, was David Seaman. And, you know, when you think 9 major trophies he won for Arsenal, 7 runners-up, and he's just an extraordinary man, an extraordinary love of Arsenal that he has and will have for the rest of his life. So I have to put David as the greatest Arsenal goalkeeper of all time.
Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Arsenal Weekly podcast, and thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Adrian Clarke is in the Match Day Show hot seat on Sunday for the Gunners' trip to Villa Park. Clarkey, always a pleasure. How are you?
Yeah, very, very well, thank you.
We'll get to all of our customary questions with you in just a second, but we've just been hearing from the great man Bob Wilson, and who's obviously a very established and huge part of the club and the coaching staff when you were a player.
Yeah, I just loved Bob Wilson, honestly. He was just such a good bloke to have around the place, a legendary figure, and just so universally popular with the players. It was incredible. And one of the biggest treats for any outfield player back in the day was to go and take part in one of Bob Wilson's goalkeeper training sessions, because basically you'd spend an hour or so lashing shots at the keeper, and he was so positive and bubbly that you would come out feeling about 20 foot tall about your shooting ability. He was just a brilliant coach.
Wow, brilliant stuff. Now, Remy Gard, ex-Arsenal. Mm. Ex-Arsenal when you were here. Mm. Of course, in charge at Villa.
I know. He's got a bit of inside knowledge, hasn't he, of how Arsene Wenger works. And I guess some people might think that gives Aston Villa a slight leg up ahead of this game. But yeah, you know, he was a nice man, very, very quiet, studious back in the day. And when he came in, nobody really knew who he was from French football, and but he was extremely professional, well-liked and respected in the dressing room. And I do remember Arsene Wenger often including him in little one-to-one chats. It was almost like he wasn't a coach, but he was like a bridge to the rest of the squad at times.
When teach
his
pet.
Yeah, when he wanted to get his message across, he would sometimes get Remy to just pass little nuggets of information back onto the players. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see the two of them go head-to-head this week.
And what difference do you feel he has made or is clearly trying to make at a struggling Villa side?
Yeah, well, it's not easy. Let's make that clear. He's inherited a side that's bereft of confidence and really struggling defensively. He's sticking with a 4-3-3 formation. I think they're trying to play a little bit more football, but he's finding his way, isn't he? I don't think he's settled yet on his strongest side. I've noticed there's a good energy about them. They're working exceptionally hard for one another. And you couldn't always say that earlier on in the campaign under Tim Sherwood. There was a few, you know, disenchanted players there. They seem to be on side, but has he got the quality to work with? That's the big question. I think he needs to buy in January and buy plenty of players.
And if he does, and if he's given the money to buy, which is obviously very important as well, do you think he will or could keep them up?
Who knows? It's not looking great for them. No. You've got to say that they're adrift, aren't they? They need defenders badly. Maybe a new goalkeeper too, and also a striker that they can rely upon to score more goals. Somebody to maybe partner a Rudi Gusted or a Jordan Ayew. At the moment, at both ends of the pitch, they're a little bit lacking.
Mm. So, with that in mind, where could Aston Villa, if they get it right, hurt Arsenal?
Well, I think they can get it right with fighting spirit, and they did show that at Southampton last time out and against Man City. They really frustrated them in Remy Gard's first match. Arsenal are a little bit weak, aren't they, at defending from set plays, and Rudi Gusted is a huge, huge player. If he starts, and I think he will start him, then it's all about Arsenal dealing with his threat from corners and free kicks. That's how I think they can hurt us. Also, you've got Jack Grealish and Jordan Ayew. Jack Grealish is, by all accounts,
ready to return
to the fold. And it's you just wonder, don't you, if the story is there to be written, Jack Grealish comes back into the side and produces a moment of magic for Aston Villa. I hope that's not the case, but if he plays, we need to watch him.
So, where on the flip side, Adrian, can Arsenal exploit Villa?
Well, as I said, I don't think they're very good defensively. They keep changing their personnel. Three different members of the back four last weekend to the previous week. So it's all very mishmash at the moment. In my view, the loss of Amavi at left-back is a really important one for Aston Villa. So down that Arsenal's right flank, I think there's a big, big weakness for Villa. Richardson's played there, Bakuna's played there. They're not proper left-backs. I think whoever's on the right wing and Hector Bellerin can really make hay down that side.
So Hector and maybe Theo or the Ox charging down that.
That's
flank.
How I'm seeing it.
Is that your key battle or have you got another one?
No, I think we've got to look towards Pierre Mertesacker here against Rudi Gusted because, as far as I can see, that is Aston Villa's best avenue of success. When it was Benteke leading the line, that was where Arsenal needed to be very careful. And Mertesacker did a brilliant job on him in the FA Cup final. Villa were poor, obviously, on the day. Arsenal are excellent. If he can do a similar job on Gusted and really concentrate, especially from corners and wide free kicks, then we should be just fine.
So, in a sentence, how do you beat Villa?
You beat Villa by concentrating better at the back. Arsenal, all they need to do is keep a clean sheet in this one because I cannot see them not scoring at the other end of the pitch.
Adrian, nice work.
Yeah, thank you.
So the Matchday Show kicks off from 1 p.m. UK time on Sunday. Log on to arsenal.com and the Arsenal mobile app for all the build-up and then uninterrupted audio commentary of the big game. That's full time on this week's show. My thanks to Peter Cech, Bob Wilson, Kevin Mooney and to Adrian Clark for their contributions today. You can tweet your questions to the podcast by using the hashtag Arsenal Weekly. And remember, if you haven't already hit the subscribe button on iTunes, do so and you'll never miss another episode. We're back on Monday the 14th of December. And until then, it's bye for now and come on, you Gunners.
Thanks for listening, and remember you can subscribe to the Arsenal Weekly Podcast on iTunes or listen to a new show every Monday on arsenal.com and SoundCloud. The Arsenal Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.